All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome to Podvincible, a podcast about Invincible. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're going to be talking about episode 7 of Invincible Season 3. What have I done?
What have you done?
Based on the classic verse.
What have you done, Alex? Is that what did you just say? Are you confessing to something?
Yeah, what'd you do?
What have I done?
Yeah.
What have I done? What have you guys know from Nightmare Before Christmas, of course, after
you're confessing to singing that song, right?
Yes,
now.
I'm confessing to delivering snakes and creepy things to children. So the United States Army needs to shoot my sleigh out of the air. And when I'm in a graveyard, I sing about it and then have a turn and ultimately go after Oogie Boogie. And that's our podcast, folks.
It's funny. I never really watched that movie to the end.
Oh,
I forgot
really?
that happens. I mean, I have
to
seen
the
it,
end,
but
it's like 70 minutes long.
Well, we always watch the first, like, half hour. It's great.
That's
but
crazy.
I feel like then it
Who
was
watches a half an hour of a movie?
Yeah, we actually, we watch Nightmare Before Christmas every Halloween after the kids get back from trick-or-treating. We watch it. It's our little
you
family
guys
tradition.
Heard of this Invincible show we should be talking about?
I have not. Well, tell us about it, Pete.
I always watch this. I always watch Invincible with my kids to completion.
That matters.
Six and eight.
All right, so we're going to get into spoilers for episode 7, What Have I Done? I'm not going to sing again. Don't worry. If you haven't watched it on Prime Video, please do. But picking up pretty much after the cliffhanger of the last episode where Angstrom Levy has built a army of Invincibles, we flash back and see kind of how that all came together, or at least how he is not dead and how he was fixed. And then the majority of the bulk of the episode, lots of different things go down, but we get the Invincible War as 15 to 18 marks, depending on who you ask, attack the Earth and wreck it. They showed off 15 and then are very specifically like, there are 18 marks, which doesn't track of the numbers. Very weird. Anyway, maybe there's three missing marks out some there somewhere.
Yeah.
We just were like, we abstained. No, thank you.
Well, I don't know. We do have some lost marks by the end of the episode. Maybe there's a little bit of a
we
clue
do.
There.
So, yes, as you're saying, we get the whole world gets wrecked. Major characters die during this episode. We get, as we predicted, a bunch of guest stars and not Image Comics guest stars per the comic book, but Robert Kirkman guest stars. We get a bunch of his other characters are showing up here who have previously tied into Invincible, which is fun. And then the Invincible War ends with Angstrom Levy kicking the alternate Invincibles to a deserted dimension while he takes on our Mark solo. Mark is able to beat him but does not kill him, even though Oliver is standing in the background and cheering him on. And then ultimately, a lot of the episode is wrap-up from there, aftermath, dealing with the repercussions of this, leading to Invincible going to New York to help with the reconstruction efforts, only to run into a character named Conquest, who is the Viltrumite, who has come to tell him, hey man, you actually haven't prepared this planet for being taken over by the Viltrumite Empire at all. So, you know what, real quick, I'm going to beat you up and do it myself. And that's where we end as they fly at each other. Obviously, a lot more to talk about there. But what did you guys think about this episode? This was we've been talking a lot about like the arc of the season and things building up to things. Obviously, we have one more to go. But Pete has a question before we even answer my question.
Yeah, before we get to your question, I would just like to talk about the rom-com situation that is Rex and Ray that comes to an unbelievable
end.
Before
we talk about the overall, let's talk about the very specific thing that we're definitely going to talk about later.
Yeah.
Yeah, can we talk about the overall first?
I'm chopping at the bit over here.
I know you are, and I know we always start with the romance, but I do think it is worth talking about this because in the comics, and I had completely forgotten this because I was shocked that the Invincible War ended about halfway through the episode, but that's actually how it happens in the comics. It's one issue and then four issues of aftermath, if I remember correctly. So they are aping that pretty directly. Justin, You've been talking about the structure of the season a lot. How'd you feel about this?
I like this episode a lot for a couple of reasons. One, it just put us there. We were in it, and it felt like a disaster movie in a really good way. Like, I like the structure of day one, two, three. There's some great just animation choices that made it feel epic while still containing it within this one episode. So great sort of pacing choices, I thought. And then, like, from an overall theme for the season, I think we finally got to just see Invincible being as opposed to moralizing. Mm-hmm. And he's like in the middle of this thing where all of his sort of plans of like, I'm going to be good, are coming unraveled at the same time. And rather than him being like, I'm going to continue to be right, he just has to sort of put the boots on the ground with it. And we didn't really get a direct sort of answer. And maybe that's what mm-hmm. we're going to get at the end of the season. But I like the way that this brought the themes together sort of less directly than we've seen so far.
Go ahead.
I just thought this was a really badass episode. A lot of fighting, which I appreciated. It was weird, the powerplex of it all, because they kind of like built up to this thing. In the beginning, Mark's kind of moping in bed, being like, hey, you know, this powerplex thing is really bothering me. And instead of getting any kind of movement, it kind of just stayed where it was like, Powerplex got freed. He was helping for a little bit and there was hope for him. And then he kind of like lost it when he saw Mark, and then they had to restrain him. And then he was taken away again. I was like, ah, damn, I was hoping to get some kind of, but it was still just like, this guy really hates Mark, man.
No. I hear what you're saying. And sure, from Powerplex's perspective, that character doesn't change a lot. But I did really like the arc of how they used him in the episode here.
Agreed.
Particularly with the conclusion of Mark and Oliver attacking him and Oliver being like, come on, let's take him down, when we know that his power, the more harder you hit him, the more powerful he gets. That Mark has seen all these versions of himself destroy everything. And the ultimate conclusion being, we got to take down Powerplex by just subduing him, by not punching him, but just holding him until he calms down and loses his power.
Which is adorable, but...
Sure, but I think
just hold him until he calms down. Just kind
should of I kill him or not kill debate. Coming on the side of Invincible, watching himself, seeing the destruction that himself can cause, and ultimately deciding, no, we got to go in the other way. I got to be a hero. I got to like calm down this situation and deal with it, not peacefully, but more in that direction than the direction that everything has been pushing me in.
Well, it's a maturity thing where he is like, yes, it would make sense. I see bad. I punch bad. And this, he's like, you know what? That's actually not helping. Escalation versus de-escalation. He's like, we can de-escalate this. We've seen enough. And even more importantly, though, I feel like what Powerplex does as he's being dragged away is tell a truth to Mark, where he's like, they'll never forgive you for this. And we see a great shot of the other hero sort of hearing this and looking at Mark. And Mark, I think, realizing like, this is probably accurate. And I think that's what finally sets him up to be like, I've had the worst day. And you want to step to me, bad teeth guy? You're done.
Oh, man. Bad teeth make him so angry because it makes him want to punch things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it is this thing of like earlier, Oliver was like, yo, kill Levy, man. He's the cause of all this. And he doesn't. And then later, he kind of hugs it out with Powerplex. But then the Viltrumite shows up and I'm like, well, I think you got to kill this guy. So it's this weird thing of going back and forth of like, who do I kill? Who do I hold until they calm down?
Who did I kill?
Yeah. You know? Well, I think the big difference between Powerplex and Conquest is that Mark knows I got to subdue him. I got to de-escalate it, like Justin was saying, versus Conquest. He can let that frustration out because he can punch the Conquest as hard as he wants, and it's probably not going to hurt him that much. So it's more about working out all the shit that he's been through today. One quick little side trip, because I don't think we've mentioned this in 7 episodes so far on the podcast. You guys know that Oliver is voiced by Christian Convery, who is Sweet Tooth from Sweet Tooth.
It's funny you say that. I noticed that today on Amazon when it popped the pictures up. I hadn't seen that. I was like, oh my God, what a turn of events.
Yes.
What a character departure.
I keep thinking about that and I keep mentioning it on the podcast, but it really struck me this episode when he was like, yeah, kill him, Mark. Go ahead, yeah. Kill him. Where I was like,
one thing we normally talk about is roof fucking. And in this, we open up with Mark and Eve on a bed. And I was just like, boo. I don't buy this at all. This is bullshit.
Well, you notice how they're not. They're having sort of a trouble in paradise conversation. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
so that's why they're not in their happy place, which is the roof.
Yeah. I usually take my heavy relationship talks to the roof. And have sex in the bed. These guys got it flipped.
Yeah. Maybe you're doing it wrong.
I say, if there ain't no shingles, I'm not ready to mingle. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's right. You're a real fire in the sheets.
If it's made of tar, ooh, we're raising the bar.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
that's what I call sex, raising the bar.
Anyways, if we get back to the Rex and Ray of it all.
No, hold on. Let's keep talking about this.
Roof, poof, poof.
Yeah, I also don't know. Is that farting? That actually does track. Definitely go on.
How do you poof the roof?
They didn't start well, and they just went downhill from there.
Like so many of the things that we do. just a little bit more on the moralizing here, because I do think the complication of Angstrom Levy being behind this, causing so much death, Mark's escalating guilt about having killed Angstrom Levy, realizing he didn't kill him and that he should have killed him to save all this death. Like, that's the sort of throwing, the grayness that I think is going to finally complicate his very harsh moral understanding. And then on top of that, you have Powerplex, a monster, but he just hates Invincible. He wants to help other people. So he's doing good. At the same time that he still wants to kill Invincible. So, like, mm-hmm. That's another fractured morality that I think Mark has to then look at. And then a character that is, like, maybe under-talked about, but Darkwing, Darkwing Duck, who was a big sticking point earlier, was, like, he's killed, and then he's the one who ends up saving a lot of people by sacrificing himself. Mm-hmm. So, like, all of these things are coming together to tell you that and I don't know if this is the right philosophy. The ends justify the means. And if you feel like someone really needs to die, kill them.
that feels like the lesson. I don't know if I personally agree with that, but I hear you in terms of the context.
But it feels like that's what the show is telling Mark. Yes. And that's a very specific philosophy that is not normally held by superheroes. But it feels like everything's coming together to push Mark to kill Conquest? Mm-hmm. Question mark?
That's a very Robert Kirkman thing to do. I could, almost hear him in my head being like going through the whole why doesn't Batman kill the Joker debate and being like, well, this is my thing. So
he will.
Yeah. We can go forward with that. We can see where it goes. I did want to jump back to the beginning of the episode and talk about that flashback with Angstrom.
Rex and Ray.
Can we talk about the flashback?
Getting so close.
We're almost there. I think we can talk about that next, okay? I just very briefly wanted to ask you guys if you bought Angstrom coming back from that, because him lying with, like, his head and all the stuff in his head basically flat on the ground being like, I'm still alive in Korean portals. I was like, I don't know, man.
Hey, it's important to having a good doctor. And he clearly, he has great doctors. They bring him back from mush, sew up his face and brain. And the thing that happens, though, with a lot of good doctors is eventually they're like, I'm sorry, but we can't accept your insurance anymore.
That's the worst.
What happens at the end when he...
I will just throw out there while I'm on the voice actor bed. So these characters are like straight from the comic book, the technicians who work on him, and they look like that in there as well. But the voice is the guy who does Pinhead in the Hellraiser movies. And I was
that's
perfect. That is just that's amazing perfection. But I like this, and I liked overall... The fights felt even more so than usual, very anime in this episode, to the probe tentacles coming at Mark. There was some shot of Oliver where he had the very anime, like, extended arm towards the camera thing going on when he was punching, which I thought was pretty cool.
There was a great fight perspective of, it was when Mark and Eve were, it was like first person, they were punching an invincible, but the camera was the invincible. I thought that was just really awesomely done and interesting choice. And then while we're talking animation, the day three, the post day three montage of all the invincibles, mm-hmm. and we saw their perspective. I loved that. It was so nice to really, in the most concise way possible, show that the bad guys won. They destroyed the planet. And it's still a bunch of marks that are doing this. Very, I loved that.
Yeah, and one other thing, and then we could go to Rex and Ray time. This is just, I'm mentioning this. Is I really liked how Mark was better at fighting Angstrom this time, because there was that fantastic season two fight where they kept falling through the portals. They very easily could have done that again, but I'm sure the discussion was like, that'll just be kind of the same thing. So instead, Mark learning from the experience, being able to avoid the portal, but still having that as the thing looming over it, and Angstrom pushing him back towards it at all times, I thought was very cool. So let's talk Rex and Ray. We get to see Ray moving into her new place when the Marks attack. Rex leaves her behind, even though she wants to help out. And ultimately, we get an enormous sacrifice from Rex, where he blows up his own skeleton.
Hey, I didn't bring this up so you could just fast forward through all the bullshit. All right, listen, let's talk about
moving day. Let's talk moving day.
Yes,
first.
Thank you. So beautiful. We see a new Rex who is helping her move in. He's talking about how rad his life is. It's a very touching moment. And you can kind of tell, you're like, oh God, this is not going to go well, because it's going so well that something bad is going to happen.
These guys are dead as hell.
I just, while we're starting off here, couldn't believe they were still together, because it really felt like we're breaking up at the end of the last episode. And they were like, here I am, helping you move in. I was like, I missed something. But
no, I think, you know, they went their separate ways, and then maybe either Rex reached out or something and he showed up to help her move. So, yeah, it was great to see. And it was great to see these versions of them, you know, and the kiss that she gives him before he leaves was very beautiful. I was very moved by it. I was immediately worried that he was like, I'll see you soon. Or he's like,
I'll be right back. I was like,
no, you're not.
Last words. Dead. Oh, man, I was like, I can't believe they painted it. They pushed it so hard.
Well, and it's funny, because last episode we predicted, we were trying to wrap our heads around the Ray and Rex relationship and why they were pushing this so hard, and speculated like maybe Ray comes back to die or something. But we were way off there.
Well, he saves her, because he was like, no, you can't quit and then immediately come back. Like, stay here. I mean, he saves her life. Mm-hmm. And then he saves, you know, the world later. And I think that was what was great about seeing kind of Rex's kind of journey here, is he really does get to a great place before he dies. And I don't know if the Rex earlier on would have done that move to sacrifice himself for everybody like that. So it was really, you know, he blows himself up. And wow, that was just, when his skeleton started to glow, it was like, holy shit. And they did a great job of like zooming out and showing how big it was. So, you know, like, oh, that Mark didn't make that, you know? So yeah, he didn't make it through that. So it was very touching. And then to kind of see everybody else reacting to it, I was very moved. I'm glad we got that relationship and those moments before that, because it really paid off. And speaking of
beautiful rom-com.
Hold on. Before you move on, I will just throw out there that this is also a place where I think, you know, there's a lot of debate online about what's better, the comic book or the TV show. And I think they're both valid in their own way. But this is a place where the extra room of the TV show really helps, because if I remember correctly, it was like one page, pretty much two panels, where Rex dies in the book. And here we get this whole scene of escalating, going harder and harder and harder against the Mark, starting with that great line, everything about this is stupid, but I guess we're doing it anyway. Very funny. And then originally in the comics, the line was something where he's like, the Mark's holding him up and says, what are you going to use? You've lost all your tricks and whatever. And he says, my skeleton, and that's it. And then you see them blow up. Here, the line, my entire goddamn skeleton dickhead. Again, great last line from Rex. Fantastic.
Yeah. And again, like, no wonder we got so much of Rex. They're just using up all the Jason Manzoukas they can, squeezing the Manzoukas sponge.
I think it's a smart move. If you got the Manzoukas, use all of the Manzoukas. And they did that. And I really think it worked well. And it was also a nice little check-in with Amber. You know what I mean? So I'm also glad that we got this in this episode.
What? That was not related at all.
Yeah. Well, they showed Amber when they were doing the news. You know what I mean? She was in her dorm room with her new boyfriend. It felt like the news.
Yes, you're right.
Great. Wow, you got a real nose for Amber. You can spot her anywhere. Two other things. I thought Rex exploding his clothes. I was like, wow, that's an expensive way to change your clothes in the beginning scene. Mm-hmm. That was funny. And then loved Rex's death. So cool. And they followed it up with one of the more garbage needle drops they've ever done on this show of Billy garbage Eilish. Needle drops. I was like, it's so...
It's a beautiful song, though.
No, of course.
It fit like, really well.
They're just so obtuse about it. And they just like come, it's clumsy the way they do it. It's and they're so loud. It is. It's like a DJ at a party who's like, all right, guys, I'm going to play a song. Play. And it's like, okay.
There's it doesn't even fade do up. It just is no, play.
Exactly. It just like starts. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. What else about the episode? Obviously, there's a lot to talk about other than Rex's death. Well,
yeah. Speaking of great acting voices, we got, was it Kahar, or which is a famous voiceover actor. Yeah, that was great. Yes. Even though it was just a little bit, it was still fun to
see
him.
That's for anybody who forgot, Kahar is the evil mummy from season one and season two, voiced by Clancy Brown. I don't remember the first scene, but like there's a Tomb Raider who comes in, tries to possess him, and it just doesn't work. The season two one is we got, was it Chloe Bennett and Ella Purnell, I think, who are these also Tomb Raiders who comes in, and he's very misogynist about it and is like, I'm not going to possess a lady. What are you talking about? So that's, they wander out of there and again he gets sucked back in the tomb. Great bit. I hope they keep it up once a season.
It's fun. Great. And honestly, they're setting it up like there's a plot reason here too. Like, and it was nice. I enjoyed that as well. There's a sort of a fair amount of comedy in this otherwise bleak sociopathic episode. There's like in the middle of this montage, they pull Donald out and he's like, I survived. Sort of. What is this good comedy beat here?
I also loved Donald's call to action where he was like, you know, I could do much better out there, you know. Yeah.
And
I was
basically a Terminator.
Yeah, he's like, hey, you know, it doesn't matter if I die, send me in, boss. So I was also really happy about the Cecil Mark relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, in the comic, they kind of burn that relationship and then it's not as revisited. But I think here it's interesting to kind of see dealing with the aftermath and him just kind of being like, hey, man, if you ever need somebody to talk to. And he was like, no, but thanks. I was like, that's kind of sweet.
I will continue to point to Walton Goggins' voice performance here, which is so much more gentle than the Cecil we got in the comics, which makes that last scene work really nicely. It also makes the whole thing with Donald, I think, work really nicely because – same sort of thing. There's an actual human relationship there rather than hard-bitten spy with a lot of secrets behind the scenes, and that's kind of pretty much it going on. So, again, another thing that they've fleshed out, I think, nicely on the show.
Yeah, really nice. And from both sides, I thought it was a great way to cap off this episode. Like, Mark at least leaves an opening. He softens on Cecil a little bit at the end. I think that's an indication that this, the morals that have changed within him are having an effect on the way he's doing. He's willing to work with and talk to Cecil going forward, I think. On the other side, do we really think that Cecil is being nice? Or is he trying to get back in now that he's seen just the amount of damage that Mark can do to the planet?
I think probably both right? Yeah. Like, I think he is so deep in it that he probably can't tell the difference between what are his plans and genuine human emotion. But what I get from that scene is he knows, like he says, that Mark isn't going to accept his help, doesn't want to talk to him, but he is there if he needs him. The side effect of that at the same time is if Mark does come and talk to him, that gets him more in so he can better protect the planet. So I think it is genuine, but also has a goal to it at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that didn't work for me, and this is probably personal, but the whole immortal duplicate thing where immortal gets his head knocked off and then
knocked off, stepped off, and then thrown through
somebody.
Yeah, that
was fine. All of that stuff
was fun.
That was fun. Yeah, that was great. All the stuff with Shapesmith as well being torn in half. Very fun. But the whole culmination of that, Immortal being like, I want to start a family. And Kate being like, sounds great. Let's go. I don't care. I'm sorry.
Wow.
Wow. I mean, I was kind of like Immortal.
We spend a lot of real estate on these characters that I'm like.
It was also weird because he was like he was proposing and she was saying yes, like she was getting proposed to. But it was just like, hey, let's start a family. She's like, oh, my God, yes. I was like, there's no ring here. What are you know, freaking out that much? But wow. All right.
Talk about two random takes from you guys. Alex is like, I don't give a fuck. I want more violence. And Pete's like, if there's no ring, there's no marriage. Girlfriend, get
if you
here.
Love her, say you love her and put a ring on it, man.
Oh, sorry. He's in the hospital. You think he's got a ring in his hand? He just woke
it's
up from being in a coma.
You don't got any rings laying around? You live forever? You can't collect a ring?
Yeah, he's like the Sonic of the Invincible Universe. He's always got rings somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
They already gave her a ring. They're already engaged
they're already married
or something. But that's the thing about it. It's like everything with their plotline is like, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm leaving the Guardians of the Globe. And they're like, guess what? I'm back in the Guardians of the Globe. And now they're like, we're leaving the Guardians of the Globe. I don't know. It's just choose a lane, man.
I like it because it was like, hey, even in all this destruction, there's still some, I think the point was like positivity, humans endure, even as they're immortal and duplicating. So,
interesting. Yeah, like, I just thought it was cool to get his head stepped off and then thrown through somebody.
Well, and also setting up that Markle's going to take over the Guardians, likely. Mm-hmm.
How do you think you discover that if your head gets popped off, you could just put it back on? Is that like a trial and error thing or?
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of like a body bouncing around and hitting walls in a room before it finds that head again. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a Weekend at Bernie's 2 type deal or something like
definitely,
that.
Definitely.
Well, how does it work? Do you have to line everything up?
You do. That's the hard part.
Mm. Yeah. A lot of touch and connecting the wires. It's like when you have to like, you know, hook up a new TV or DVD player. Everything goes
keep
in the right hole.
Tech.
Yeah. Tech jacket.
DVD player? Are you going back in time?
Well, here's the thing. I for some screeners I got this award season, they only came on DVD. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I got to go find a DVD player.
Yeah, or use a PS5. You know what I mean?
Oh, Richie Rich over here. Yeah. Oh my God. Jeez Louise.
Well, maybe that's a good time to talk about some of these heroes, guest stars we saw. Speaking of Tech Jacket, we saw in space.
Yes, we saw him fighting in space. That was fun. He was in the crossover as well. The big one, which I thought if you knew who this was, you're fine, but it's weird that they just threw him in here we're supposed to know who he is Jonathan Banks from Breaking Bad. Was the voice of Britt on the episode.
Yeah.
And Britt is like baked into the Invincible comics. If Donald's origin story comes from the Britt comics, not the Invincible comics.
And Aaron Paul Breaking Bad there. Too.
Yeah, I know. It's like a Breaking Bad reunion.
Yeah.
The fact that they were like, yeah, Britt's going to take care of it. To be like, you mean this character that we've never met before on the show? A little
it was weird. It was sort of like
Britt. From the comic books.
Also, the way they said it, it just made it sound like it was short for Britney. And I was like, oh, it's more like the Brit.
Yeah. It was also the same way we got to see another Robert Kirkman character, Astounding Wolfman, who they spent a lot of time being like, how's he doing? Did he survive? You know him. You've been watching Invincible.
Yeah, he's astounding. Yes. And also he got the like, I already killed you thing. Like a lot of dialogue shouted at his face.
Mm-hmm. It was good to see him though.
Yes. One other thing that I'll mention just while I'm thinking about it. I did like all the stuff with the house, with Debbie's house, with the Grayson household. First, the guy being like, oh, man, when they weren't there and then leaving. Very funny. And then all the talk, like when they were in the circle and talking about their different perspectives from their different realities, I thought was really neat and interesting.
Well, and isn't that a real case for in a nature versus nurture, we got a real nurture win here in this episode where all these different Marks had whatever in their lives happened to them. And they're all like, most of them anyway, are just like abject sociopaths, which I feel like that's an interesting idea. Are we saying that it's literally just about how you're raised? And this Mark is so special because he actually was the one in 1,000 who is a hero.
Wow, yeah, I guess so. I mean, otherwise, it certainly could be. Turns out to be a psycho.
Well, but there's at least one of them is like, I don't think this is the exact phrase, but
I want my mommy.
Yeah, I want my mommy. So there's one
that
of
doesn't sound healthy the way he said it. Just
I want my mommy.
Me want mama. He says that.
Yeah. He's in a full mask too, so he's not, you know.
But is our Mark a sociopath then? Because these marks are, and sociopathy.
Justin, how dare you? Just because I wonder, 18 marks from God knows how many is sociopaths does not mean that our Mark is a sociopath.
I mean, it can.
To the point that you're making, I do wonder if Robert Kirkman, and maybe he's talked about this, but has a specific idea why this Mark is like this. But I do wonder if it's maybe his powers developed later, so he had more time to live as a normal kid. Omni-Man was around longer, pretending to be a normal dad. So it did give him the chance to really start to grow up and really start to form a moral compass before he got the powers. Maybe these other ones got them earlier. Maybe
I think Justin
stood up to his dad.
I think Justin needs to go back and listen to that Billie Eilish song, because in there, there's a line that's like, this Mark isn't a psycho. You know, and I think that explains a lot.
This Mark isn't a psycho.
You sang. You said you wouldn't sing again.
I did not. No. I never promised that.
Yeah, you did. I mean, you promise it, but you never live up to the promise. Well, and let me just throw another angle on what I was just saying. We have for a large section here, Mark bailing on the world to say, yeah. Right inside. So he's literally saying, like, I have to protect her just in case someone comes for her. And causing many deaths, I would argue. He spent the better part of a day of the 3-day Invincible War, the most of day two, he was sitting at Eve's side. That's someone who is not thinking about the larger moral situation. He's thinking about, I can't lose Eve.
And even though Cecil went in and was like, yo, dude, I don't think when she wakes up, she's going to be happy to hear this. He even was like, hey, Oliver's out there. What about your mom? None of that moved him at all. So
I know. And I was surprised by that. Again, I feel like Mark is a little bit on the wrong side of this situation, something we've seen a lot over the course of this season. And
Do you want him to turn into a psychopath? Because it seems like that's the angle you're reaching for.
I'm not trying to. I think that a lot of the choices he's made, I'm like, why is our hero doing this? Like, well, that's a bad choice.
Well, but I think that comes back to what we were talking about, or at least what I was positing earlier in terms of understanding Robert Kirkman tried to work his brain around what is a realistic way of treating a superhero situation. And from reading comic books and watching media, etc., we expect a superhero to be somebody who always does the right thing, even if it means sacrificing themselves, sacrificing everybody they loves. But when the chips are down, many of us would not do that, right? Like, many of us would not be like, I'm going to go out and fight the Invincible War. You would stay by your girlfriend, by your wife, with your family, and try to protect them. And that may or may not be the right thing to do, but I do think that's what we're getting here, is trying to depict somebody who is a more whole human being than rather, this is right, this is wrong. And I think that gets back to what you were saying earlier, Justin, that we may end the season in a place where it's far more gray than that.
I think if you guys saw the longer cut of the episode, Mark had just hit that, like, help button and was ordering food. And that takes a long time in a hospital. And he can't, leave before that gets there. You know what I mean? So
yeah. I'm sorry. In the hospital, the help button brings you food. Is that
you press it? Yeah, it's a special kind of way to press it. Yeah,
right.
You obviously haven't spent a lot of time in hospitals.
So your girlfriend is dying. Oh, I've been pressing the food button.
Where's the food for Seamless? I'm sorry.
To put it in sort of terms we can use, because he obviously, yes, he made that choice, but he's one of the most powerful beings on the planet. You think he would have more of an obligation. For us, it'd be like, we're fighting in the great podcast war. Mm-hmm. And if one or all of us were abdicating a parental responsibility to continue to podcast, that's us making the heroic choice. And I, for one, am ready to do that at all times.
Yeah, I mean, we've been able to tell if you're watching the video version. So, I did want to mention one other voice actor. At the end of the episode, as we mentioned, we get Conquest, and Conquest is voiced by none other than Jeffrey Dean Morgan. As a Walking Dead fan, I think this was obviously very purposeful, because we got Steven Yeun, who played Glenn on the show, facing down Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who played Negan. So we're
vengeance will be ours.
This time it's your turn. 100%. Like, this is 100% Glenn versus Negan round two. And I think we're going to get some justice for Glenn going on there.
Do you think we're going to get like a baseball bat wrapped in wire face?
I want to be in a circle and do that whole thing again. But this time Negan's down there.
I will say, from looking ahead a little bit of the comic book, there's something similar that happens. It's not a baseball bat, but we're going to get like, if they go with the comic book, I think we're going to get something that's going to be very satisfying.
It can be a quick 2 second, series of frames of him just grabbing that that's on the ground and hitting him with it a couple times. Okay. That's fun. I would push for that if I were them.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Anyway, great casting there. Very excited about that. Any other notes from the episode before we start to wrap up?
The only other note I had was a line, swearing doesn't make you cool.
Oh, yeah. I picked that up, too. That was a fun line.
Yes. That was very fun. Overall, like we said, great action in this episode, some big moments.
I was surprised the mom let Oliver go and join the fight, because Oliver was like flying away and she's like, no, don't go. And he's like, yeah, but they need me out there. And I was like, oh, man, this is a real tough spot for the mom to be like, you know, yeah, he could be helpful, but he could also die. Also, you let him fly away. No one's protecting you. So, yeah, that was a tough call. But
I think that's her emotional arc over the course of the season, is holding on tight to Oliver at the beginning to letting him go here at the end and trusting him, because he's not as powerful as Mark, but he is very powerful and he does have to help. Yeah. And I think that ties it to the whole moral compass thing we're talking about, even though he is Sweet Tooth shouting, kill him, which complicates things a little bit. I think what Debbie is saying is like, I got to let you be the hero I think you could be, even though he's maybe being a different sort of hero than she might want.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Why don't we wrap up here and talk about the invincible moment of the episode. Justin, what is your invincible moment?
I'm going to put it back on the Powerplex telling the crowd, like, they'll never forgive you for this. Telling Mark via the crowd for that. Because I think that's going to set up a lot of what we're dealing with in the next season of Invincible. Not what we're going to get right away, but in the future.
As excited as I am about the Negan-Glenn showdown, I think the moment was the him and Cecil moment of him softening to Cecil and kind of what that means moving forward.
I'm going to actually go one beat before Justin and say them de-escalating Powerplex to me was the most important thing, because so much of the season has been about hugging it out, because Mark and Oliver.
It wasn't a hug. Just to be clear. Just that's not what a hug is. That's not what a hug is. You should know what a hug is, Pete, and that's not a hug.
By the way, next time you're going to babysit your nephews, I'd love to come along and just see what's happening with a phone by my side and the police on speed dial, but for no reason.
Give us a hug.
Yeah, wish me luck. I'm going this weekend. I'm going in, man.
Anyway, them de-escalating it. So much of the season has been about Mark teaching Oliver the right way to be a hero, and that really felt like the culmination there, even though we have one episode to go.
Culmination.
It sounds like Justin and I are diverging paths here in terms of how we think this is going to go, but I'm still hopeful that Invincible is going to embrace classic heroism, but I guess we shall see.
We shall see
on the last episode of the season. In the meantime, if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. You can subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay invincible.
No spoilers, but Pete, couple characters going down this week for you. How you feeling?
Good, man.
Not good.
Not good.
Happens in threes.
Amber, stay alive.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.